In today's episode of Movie Rollers, we're going to review Godzilla and Million Dollar Arm. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
So I'm really excited
for
the World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
It's my once every 4 years that I become a complete sports fanatic.
Hooligan.
I mean, hooligan. No, I'm really not a big sports guy at all. But
at all.
Something about the World Cup, there's something about the fact that it comes around once every 4 years, there's something about the national pride of it and the spectacle of it that just turns me into a complete fanatic.
Right. Joe thinks he can support 5 or 6 teams.
At once.
Yes.
Well, I do have the interesting mixed cultural heritage. Okay. I was raised in England. That gives me England to support. I was born in Eastern Europe, so whenever they qualify, I do support those.
Any Eastern European country.
Well, I can use Czech or I can use Poland, so right. Both of those I have affiliations with. We live in the US, so the USA is a team. And, of course, my father is from Ghana, and Ghana is a real underdog in these competitions, and they're a feisty bunch of players. They tend to do a lot better than anyone ever gives them credit for. So I totally root for Ghana. I'm just looking forward to a month of great football, or soccer, as I should say, in this country.
I like watching, but I don't look forward to living with a hooligan for a month.
Do you go to, like, places where other people gather?
Yes.
And scream? Or when, do you watch it at
whenever
home?
We can. Okay. Yeah, whenever, yeah. There's an opportunity.
And screams independently in the house alone.
But, yeah, I don't know what it is.
I often think like someone's like coming in and terrorizing him, then I realize it's just Joe watching the TV. Yeah. How about you, Yazdi? Are you into the World Cup?
I am. I'm not like rabid about it, but I do enjoy
rabid
it.
Is a good word.
But I mean, I just like the universality of it. I just like that it's a good way for people to get, you know, all het up about something. You know, which ultimately doesn't matter so much, but it's good to get your juices flowing and excited and so forth. And I like that there's nothing cute about it. And I like that people take this very seriously. And I like that the people who win the World Cup carry it as a badge of honor, you know, for the next, until the next World Cup. And I like the institution of it.
Yeah. And
I like FIFA. I like the word FIFA. Carry on.
Yeah. Well, some people wouldn't agree with you.
A little bit of a dodgy organization.
Yeah.
But,
I think the other thing is, besides the Olympics, certainly I think growing up in the UK, soccer plays such a big part of our lives. It really is a sport that seems to bring the world together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's like nothing else. And I think the World Cup does it more so than the Olympics, because the Olympics just has such a mixed bag of different sports and events. And, you know, yes, you look at who's going to get the many gold, as you know, the most gold, but oftentimes that's the country that sends the most athletes. You know, it doesn't seem to be as important as...
Well, the one that lies the most.
You know, a squad of 20 or so men really putting their entire country's pride on mm-hmm. the line. But I have a love-hate relationship with penalty shootouts, because every team that I support almost always goes out on penalties, which is just it's a frustrating legacy.
Change the law.
Well, something needs
play
to happen, because
death.
it's such... They didn't lose the game. They just, you know, one guy just lost his nerve, and that kind of thing frustrates me. But anyway, this isn't Football Wallers. This is Movie Wallers.
But we do have a sport movie.
That's right. Yeah, Million Dollar Arm. So did you want to start with that one?
Why not?
Sure. So Million Dollar Arm is actually based on a true story. A sports agent stages an unconventional recruitment strategy to get talented Indian cricket players to play Major League Baseball. This is directed by Craig Gillespie and written by Thomas McCarthy. And it stars John Hamm, Asif Manvi, Alan Arkin, Bill Paxton, and Lake Bell, amongst others. And Yazdi, you're the only one of us mm-hmm. that saw this. This is another Disney classic, I guess.
Is it produced by Disney?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm interested to see what you think of this, given I love John Hamm.
And just a reminder, the director, Craig Gillespie, Also directed Fright Night, Lars and the Real Girl.
Which I've loved all those movies.
Oh, Lars and the Real Girl is
love
top
and
notch.
Fright Night was great. Fright Night,
the remake, yes.
The remake, right. And a movie called Mr. Woodcock, which didn't do
loved,
so well critically.
I actually Thornton. Loved yeah, loved fun. Mr. Woodcock.
And Tom McCarthy, by the way, he's amazing. I mean, he directed this movie called The Station Agent a long time ago with Patricia Clarkson and Peter Dinklage before he got famous. And it's one of the great independent movies of all time. And, you know, yeah.
So tell us about Million Dollar Arm.
So here's my question to you. Where is the line between heartfelt and schmaltzy? And I think that's at the crux of this movie.
Hmm.
And
Blindside is what springs to my mind when you ask a question like that.
Correct. Is it heartfelt or is it schmaltzy or is it both?
It's both.
Both.
It's both, and it depends on the day that you ask me, because I think there are days I will tell you, great movie. There are days when I'll be like, ugh, manipulation.
And I thought that we were all, as human beings, pretty easily divided along that line of, you know, we generally agree that Casablanca is heartfelt and it's not schmaltzy. And we all agree that Love Story, for example, is schmaltzy and it's not heartfelt. But I'm starting to realize that this line is very, very vague. There's a huge standard deviation around this line. Because I found this movie exceptionally heartfelt. This movie played me like a piano, okay? I was like, ding, 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 ding. You know, every tune it was playing, I was like, ding, dong. I mean, I really, this movie played me like a piano. And then I come out of the movie and, you know, it's been about 3 weeks since the movie has come out. And review after review, everybody's just banged this movie for being so contrived and being so schmaltzy and being so saccharine. And so I don't know anymore. I think it's how you're wired, you know, what somehow triggers or trips some part of your emotional circuitry and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I did not feel manipulated, like, for example, I did with The Fault in Our Stars. I actually think this is a reasonably well-made, authentic, well-meaning sports film.
Mm.
And I think when a good sports film works, it really works. And even if it's not necessarily this is based on reality. It's based on real events. This actually transpired. And even when it's not exactly playing to how things might have played out in the real world, even if it's Disney-fied, you cannot discount its effectiveness, just like The Blind Side. I mean, you know, nobody's going to say Blind Side is a great documentation of, you know, the great social injustice that happened. I mean, it's a Disney-fied movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it works. I mean, I've watched it a couple of times on television, and it still works. There's certain scenes which still work. And The Million Dollar Arm is like that. I mean, none of it should work. It's completely playing it by the cliches. But it all came together for me. I cried twice in the movie and I laughed and my heart was full.
There's a lot of crying going on.
And I can't
I'm a little worried about
I can't reasonably ask more for a movie.
Yeah.
You know, if your heart is full when you come out of it, you know, so, for some it's schmaltzy, for me it's great movie.
So this is the thing. I think that it's very easy for us to give movies that are Disney-fied, you know, it's become an adjective, a hard time. But there's nothing wrong, in my mind, with a movie that has a good message, that's executed well, and makes you feel good at the end of the 90 minutes.
I would agree with that statement, except if the movie is predictable. And I think if you see the happy ending coming, you know, in terms of it's, you know, it's telegraphed almost from the beginning of Act One. That can take away from that kind of movie.
But it's a sports film.
Yeah,
I mean, you
of
always
course.
Know what's going to happen
exactly.
in a sports film. You know?
Right, but that would give me a bit of a problem with this then.
Right, but then it's no different to something like The Edge of Tomorrow, which you both loved, Joe, which you loved, when you know that Tom Cruise isn't going to die.
Spoiler.
So,
yeah, all right.
I mean, you know.
Again, maybe there is something about this movie, and actually any good sports film, that they're always about the underdogs. And I inherently like movies about underdogs. And the other thing
you
is...
You would like to watch Ghana in the World Cup then?
I will.
But are we going to assign Yazdi a team then?
Oh, we should do that.
Okay, you're a Ghana supporter officially.
I'm Ghana supporter, okay.
Oh God, you might have to wear a t-shirt. Joe's
I can do
t-shirts.
That. Oh, I can do that.
Anyway, okay. Sorry.
And then the other piece about it is a sizable portion of the movie is set in India.
I was going to say that. You know, How is that? I would love to see that.
So, you know, the premise of the movie is that it's about this disillusioned sports agent, very reminiscent of Jerry Maguire, who has this sudden idea that, you know, he's going, the one untapped area in the world in terms of looking for baseball players is India,
yeah.
You know, because in India, in cricket, you bowl, and he decides to have a reality show in India where he's going to recruit these two people. And so I think the movie does not, to its great credit, ever, not for a minute, try to glamorize India. India is shown in its, you know, poverty-stricken, grimy, dusty
way. I'm tired
way.
Of that, though.
But it's not
squalor porn
it's
like
not squalor porn
Slumdog.
It's not. Okay. It's not at all. And it's, you know, it's very respectful of those two characters. They're two characters that he brings, you know, who get picked up from India and brings them back to the U.S. And I think a lot of people who have a problem with the movie is they expected a lot more from the fish out of water portion of that movie where, you know, there are these two guys who don't even speak English who have been recruited from villages
in
India.
It is being sold that way. I mean, if you look at the trailer.
Maybe it's how it's been marketed. And
but come on, we're living in 2014. It's a global world. I mean, people don't, you know, there's globalization. I mean, unless you live in some remote village in Timbuktu, I mean,
right.
You know.
And so, you know, that portion of the movie, after they come back to the U.S., I think maybe they could have played it more for the fish out of water bit. But I didn't care. I just like Tom Cruise's character in Jerry Maguire, when he has his big, you know, moral arc, when he comes around and realizes what he's so disillusioned with the sport and he realizes what is important about the sport for him. Sounds tacky, sounds horrible, but it works in Jerry Maguire. Again, John Hamm's character in this movie goes through the same thing, and I completely bought it. I don't know. It worked for me. I'm just like A Million Ways to Die in the West. And by the way, this movie is superior to that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked at the poor critical reception that this movie has received.
Well, it's not too shabby. I mean, it's showing like above 60%, you know, okay. A 6 out of 10. So it's above average. I mean,
the other great thing about the movie is, I mean, John Hamm is always good, and he kind of almost plays
I was going to say, he in the trailers, at least that I've seen, he looks quite different in his demeanor to the Don Draper character. Is that, has he managed to
He starts off as Don Draper. He starts off as this cocky, you know, sports agent. Maybe not as cocky as Jerry Maguire, but,
okay.
You know, almost there. But then, you know, he goes through a transformation. And again, you know, this is what I liked about the movie. The movie, when he's in India, he's sweaty and, you know, he's unshaven and he looks like he hasn't slept for days. And that's how you are when you go to India. At least I am, at least for the first few days. But I think the other good thing that this movie does is it has the exceptional good sense to hire Lake Bell as the female love interest. And remember Lake Bell? We saw her at Los Angeles Film Festival last year.
Right, yeah. In a world, yes.
And she plays the female love interest. And, you know, there's something right by the world with somebody like Lake Bell getting a chance in movies. I want her to be in a movie. Some people belong in cinema. You're happy to see them on a screen. I'm happy to see Charlize Theron on the screen. I'm so happy to see Lake Bell on the screen. And talk about a cliched character. She literally is the girl next door. Literally, she's the girl next door who lives next door. You know, and she represents the antithesis to all, you know, to all the models that the sports agent is dating. And she's like the serious, geeky medical student who lives next door. And of course, she's the one who connects with the guys and she's the one who teaches him what's important in life. And he grows to love her. And oh, none of it should work, but it completely works.
Okay, that's good. Yes. That's a nice review.
Yeah.
So what's your score?
8 out of 10. Only
nice.
Because it played me so much.
You've been so generous.
I know. I don't know what's going on. I think it's a good time at the cinema.
It is. It's kind of that season. I mean, things are, you know, heating up now.
But, you know,
simmering.
Yeah, maybe you guys should see it down the road when it's out on video and judge for yourself.
I think what you've said here intrigues me enough to go want to see it. I mean, I think it looks like an easy enough movie to watch. So,
oh, and again, talk about good casting. Alan Arkin is in it, being so Alan Arkin. Okay, brilliant. And Bill Paxton is here, being
you
so
mentioned,
Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I smiled every time I saw both of those guys on the screen.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. And now onto something completely different.
It's like a 180 degree turn.
We're going to go talk about
Whiplash
Godzilla.
On the way.
So I'll introduce this one briefly. So, I mean, who hasn't heard of Godzilla? The movies, the it's really a Japanese myth that really grew out of the post-nuclear world of Japan. And the original Godzilla movie was a movie, I think, actually called Gojira, King of Monsters. It's available on Netflix if anyone does want to revisit that. I didn't think it was a great movie, but there were a whole series of Godzilla movies that came out after that back in the 60s in Japan, and they had this kind of man in suit type thing. So you can imagine, you know, as a kid, how much fun I had watching those particular movies. And then, you know, there was a cartoon called Godzilla, and the 1998 version by, I think, was it Roland Emmerich, directed that one?
With Matthew Broderick. 16 years ago.
Was, really? You know, it was a bit of a disappointment. It was too dark and it was too silly. And, you know, Godzilla suddenly became female with laying eggs and all that kind of stuff. So I was actually very excited to hear that, you know, Godzilla was going to return again to the screen. I became less excited when I found out that director Gareth Edwards was at the helm, because he directed a movie called Monsters that I had a very hard time with a couple of years ago. I think we did review this on Movie Wallace.
Yeah, it was a small budget British film.
And it was a very low budget movie. He actually was a visual effects director.
You've seen it.
Okay. Yeah, no, you hated it too, I think.
Okay.
Because it was a movie about monsters that basically had no monsters.
Because it was a low-budget movie.
It was a low-budget road trip movie, basically. And I think we expected something different. So expectations were misaligned. So anyway, he's at the helm of this current remake. It stars Bryan Cranston, Elizabeth Olsen, Ken Watanabe. Juliette Binoche is in this as well. Aaron Taylor-Johnson, who I'm not familiar with, he plays...
He's from the Chloe Grace Moretz movies.
Carrie. Was he in Carrie?
No. The superhero Kick-Ass.
That's
right.
Oh,
gosh,
yeah.
There he is. Yeah, gosh, he's grown since then. So that's why I didn't recognize him. Slap on the wrist there for me. So the story here is, you know, very similar. It's a Godzilla movie. Bryan Cranston is effectively a nuclear scientist. Something starts going wrong there. He is removed from that situation and almost packaged as being some kind of crackpot conspiracy theorist, but there is something going on with what was purported to be a nuclear accident, and the movie kind of launches off from there. So, guys, what did you think of Godzilla?
I was so excited to see this movie because I love Godzilla. Like you, Joe, we were exposed to a lot of Godzilla growing up in the UK, and especially given Bryan Cranston's the lead. But I was really disappointed by how seriously this movie takes itself. This movie was literally devoid of joy, given it's a monster movie, which I never thought, and I never thought I'd say this, but I actually enjoyed last year's Pacific Rim way more than I enjoyed this Godzilla. Because the kaijus in that Pacific Rim movie were just much more fun to watch, which in my mind were equivalent to Godzilla's.
Yes, dear. So you're nodding in agreement here with Rashmi.
So let's just get this out of the way. Everybody who goes to see Godzilla wants to see this big, gnarly thing going, chomping and destroying cities and all of that. From that perspective, the movie is 100% successful. The creatures here look amazing. Okay, there are certain scenes which are shot, especially in the last 20 minutes of the movie, in San Francisco, in the darkness, with these lanterns hanging. Brilliantly conceived, you know, the fights between the two monsters, very well done. Everything else in the movie, crap. Really? I mean, this movie, I mean, how in God's name did they get Sally Hawkins to be in this movie? How did they get Juliette Binoche to be in this movie? I actually, and Ken Watanabe, I felt bad for these seasoned actors having to say these god-awful lines. I mean, this movie has absolutely no heart. Those human characters might as well be wooden sticks walking around with, and somebody saying dialogue from the behind. So an abysmal failure from the humanistic part of the story, but in terms of the monster clash, it gets the job done.
Yeah, I mean, I have to express an overall sense of disappointment here. I mean, I have some mixed feelings because I think the art direction, again, the Godzilla stuff is great. My main criticism of that aspect of the movie is it's a Godzilla movie. I want to see Godzilla. He doesn't show up until act 3.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry guys, if you're listening, this might have a few spoilers in it, but boy, do when I hear about Godzilla, I want to see him. He's got to be there for at least half the movie. I mean, I can, we can deal with some build up here, but he's just not there. So, you know, that's kind of a big disappointment for me. And I think the real problem with this movie is that it's a new director in Hollywood syndrome. I think Gareth Edwards had a vision for a kind of a more austere Godzilla. I think he wanted to focus on a lot of the relationships, which I think he did in Monsters, whereas I think in this movie he was getting some potential interference here, in that his vision was being diluted by people who wanted to see maybe some more action thrown in. I don't know if it's a spoiler to say that there is more than one monster in this movie. And I think that the trailer, I think only the final trailer, because I watched the trailers like with great excitement and anticipation, only the final trailer gave away the fact that there was some other creature involved other than Godzilla. So I just felt like there was, they missed a lot of the theme of the original Godzilla. And when I think about a director like Gareth Edwards, who made an intelligent art house movie of, you know, monsters, I think I was hopeful that we would see a more intelligent version of the story. The theme of Godzilla is really fear of nuclear holocaust, yeah. I mean, and destruction. It's very embedded in Japanese culture from the Hiroshima days, you know, more recently with the Fukushima.
Yeah.
And I think they missed that opportunity to bring that real terror sense of destruction to the movie. So I'll shut up for a second, okay. But I have so many opinions.
So here's my problem. I think it had actually a very good act one. I think the setup was really good to start with. But then, like you said, this didn't feel like it was Godzilla's story. It actually became the story about these massive unidentified terrestrial organisms, or MUTOs, okay, which was really annoying to me. If you come back with a franchise 16 years after a bad reboot, then you owe it to your audience to have more story about Godzilla and the origins of Godzilla, a little bit more. And to me, this felt more like a sequel of a bad film that had come before it than a reboot.
I think I completely agree with you, but I think what he was going for is kind of, he's playing with the morality of Godzilla, because Godzilla is always seen as this evil, destructive, you know, representation of something which is going around just destroying things. And I think he wanted to play with that in terms of how Godzilla turns out in this movie. So I think from that perspective, it was necessary to have, I mean, and every Godzilla movie has been about Godzilla versus this and Godzilla versus that. So he always needs a formidable adversary.
Right.
And they created these adversaries. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It could have been so much better. And, you know, while I'm ranting, you know, why must, ever since District 9, why must every alien creature make that clicking noise? Those MUTOs, all these made that clicking noise. You know what I mean? They all make, District 9 started it. Actually,
very good.
The Edge of Tomorrow, the monsters also make that clicking noise. It's like, you know, yeah. Come on, try something else.
Maybe someone found some biology that, you know.
But anyway, I'm off topic. But did you believe for a minute the relationship between Bryan Cranston and Juliette Binoche? Did you believe anything between Bryan Cranston and his son? No. Did you believe anything between Aaron Taylor-Johnson and his wife?
The character
Although Elizabeth Olsen was very good.
No, but I think the character stuff was really badly done in this movie. And I think, you know, you see an actor like Cranston, who I admire very much, busting his ass on some really clunky dialogue here. And then the movie switched to follow his son, which was Aaron Taylor-Johnson. And the issue I had with that character was that he seemed to have a specific set of skills that were there only to insert him into the specific situations that were presented. It's like, you know, we need a bomb disposal expert. Oh, hell, hey, yeah, I'm a bomb disposal guy. I'll help. So I think that aspect of the movie was really clunky. I don't know any other word for it, but it was just poorly crafted. I don't know how it went so wrong when you have, I think, a director who is very capable of doing the character stuff very well with no money and no script, because Monsters was improvised.
And, you know, the entirety of, you know, Sally Hawkins' presence in this movie is just staring at the camera in fear. That's all she's doing. She's just staring at the camera in fear.
No, I feel
Don't hire Sally Hawkins. Don't hire David Strathairn, who's done amazing work, and have him, you know, say stupid things, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't feel bad for them, okay? It's a beach house for every one of them. They made a lot of money for it. They live to be in a big blockbuster. So I don't feel too bad for them. But I just wish that those humanistic elements had a little bit more heft to them.
Yeah.
It was so dull. I mean, it was such a dull movie. I mean,
there's some scenes which are visually brilliant.
Oh, like, of course. Now, yeah, and I agree with you. Those the battle scenes are really good. But again, it resulted in the complete destruction of San Francisco.
It also opens very promisingly with this whole documentary style footage. I mean, I think
great opening credits.
I was really like,
that's what I was saying.
This is
Rude
it. This is the Godzilla movie that I want. You know, all that stuff, all this kind of conspiracy theory, the hidden stuff, the nuclear bomb testing, you know, the Bikini Island footage. I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be it. And
exactly.
Then,
and you know, there's a great scene where they are going in a train and it's going through a tunnel. It's in the night and there's water underneath, and you see just a little bit of Godzilla going underneath.
Love it.
Brilliantly done.
Love it.
You know, there's some scenes which are just, you know, somebody's taken a lot of effort. There's a scene set in Japan where he's on the subway and he's with this little boy. Again, very well realized. So it seems like, you know, they were concentrating more on the action pieces, and everything else seems kind of slapped together. And, you know, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, not to be mean, but he's unrecognizable. You know, there's working out and then there's becoming a block of beef. I mean, what happened to him?
Well, that's why we couldn't recognize him.
I mean, it's like, please, less time at the gym, more time with acting classes, please.
Yeah.
I don't play. I'm not going to hold him too accountable because his lines were really, really very poor. And, you know, even Cranston struggled with some of the lines that he had to deliver here.
Yeah, and a phenomenally bad decision about his story arc, by the way.
Yeah.
Really. Whoever thought
really
of that.
Bad. Yeah. Really anyway. Bad. Okay, let's wrap it up. So, Yazdi, you go first.
Great opening credits, great monsters, but like I said at the beginning, everything else fails. I mean, that very last scene of the mother being reunited with their son, I almost threw up. It's so manufactured. So plastic. It just, whatever goodwill the movie had bought, that last scene completely demolished it. Stay home and rent Pacific Rim instead. I give it 6 out of 10.
For me, the biggest problem with this movie was just how poorly written it was. It didn't come together. And, you know, ultimately, when I want to see a Godzilla movie, I want to see Godzilla and I want to see lots of him. And he doesn't show up until the final act of this movie, which is a horrible disappointment, because when he does, the movie is made better for it. And I think, you know, more of that and less of the, you know, awful character stuff is what this would have made this movie a whole lot better. So I'm going to give this a very generous 6 out of 10. I don't think it warrants a 6 out of 10. But, you know, just for the fact that this franchise means something to me and the movie didn't bore me to death.
Godzilla falls so shy of the great movie it should have been from that act one. This is so average. 5 out of 10.
And it's interesting because this movie has reviewed generally quite well. I mean, we were on vacation when it opened, and at the time the Tomatometer was really scoring like highly. 80, I think it's now averaged down to around 73%. So it's still doing well, and I think we will get a sequel. It's pulled in $175 million. So
please listen to this podcast and make it better.
Yeah, hire Doug Liman. Hire somebody who knows how to write a good script.
Yeah, anyway. All right. Mail at movieworlders.com, twitter.com/moviewallers, and facebook.com/moviewallers as well. We're going to be off to see a little bit of improvised comedy tonight, so we're going to have to wrap this podcast up right now. Until our next show, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.